Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Well, today is Monday. It's August 8th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, so I forgot to put on the Blog Talk Radio jingle, but that's okay because we all know where we are. And I'm so excited because on Mondays, we always start the week off on the right foot or the left foot or on both feet. I don't know which way it goes, but it's always with White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher John Bailey, who's always a thrill to talk to. And there's so much that he's been reporting about. And one of the most interesting things that does affect so many people is the recent Con Ed bills that are very, very high. And there's a new rate that's being awaited by people who used to subscribe to Sustainable Westchester. So, John, first of all, good morning. Have you heard anything new about Sustainable Westchester or even Con Ed? Is Con Ed trying to do something to lower rates?
No, not really.
Well, that's frightening.
It's a very a cone of silence has developed over this whole issue for about 2 months now. And however,
why do you think that is, though? Why can't they just be forthright about it? What's so difficult? I don't understand.
It's because that nobody really wants to admit what is really going on. It is my opinion only, and this is not an accusation, that because the rate, they could not reach a rate agreement with their previous ESCOs, Sustainable Westchester was facing a consorted price-fixing situation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if everybody has the same price and it's higher than you really feel you can sustain over a couple of years,
yeah,
you're not going to do it. So they decide they would pause. And according to law, when the contract ran out, Con Ed, who is the normal supplier of electricity in this region, Westchester County, had to step into the breach and fill the electrical need to the ESCOs would not. And now the problem is that Sustainable Westchester has advised me that they have gone back to bid. They have hired a company that is the nation's largest bidder. That conducts auctions for prices from power companies across the country to supply green energy or whatever. And we await that rate that is chosen by Sustainable or will be chosen. And they haven't come up with it yet. The idea here, as they said in their one communication to consumers, they said that they would have the new rate in place and be resupplying, they hoped, by November the 1st. That's 3 months.
That's a long time.
Of Con Ed rates. And, but, of course, this is because of contracts. So they told me last week that they cannot reveal anything about a negotiated contract, not admitting that there is one yet, because it takes a while to get all the paperwork together.
I see. Yeah, this is always
now,
the legal part.
That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. It's form. They're forms.
Exactly.
It's online. It's click of a button. You'll just plug in the rate.
Yeah,
unless
exactly.
They're changing the terms. And I believe that they have gotten a rate in place, but they're just not admitting it because White Plains has scheduled a hearing to present, to accept a new contract with Sustainable, to renew it. And they're going to do that September the 6th. And
oh,
then,
wow.
they scheduled that last week at last week's council meeting. So it's not what they say or refuse to say or refuse to admit at Sustainable Westchester. It's just that they just want to keep us in the dark because they don't want to point. I hear no effort by any politician to complain about this situation on behalf of the consumer. And it is there is one bright lining, though, and it appears that Con Ed has been very beneficent. I received my electric bill Saturday, and in June, my electric bill under the sustainable rate was $210.
And how did it change?
And yes, $210 in June, and then for July, which I just got Saturday, it was $390.
Oh my God!
Yes.
Why is
it
much?
Doubled? It doubled. However, that is because of the heat.
I didn't think of that. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's right. You're using more kilowatt hours. The only way the consumer can protect themselves from a whopper of a bill is scaling back their air conditioning and electric usage. It's just hard to do when it's 105 in the shade.
Right.
92 in the shade, but 105 in direct sunlight. That's what it's been for the last week with high humidity. So what the silver lining is that for some reason, which I have asked Con Ed about, they have retained the former sustainable Westchester rate of 7.48 cents per kilowatt hour. That is really good news. They apparently are either, you know, biting the bullet and buying electricity, but, you know, not paying the full rate, charging us the full rate for it. But I have a question into the Con Ed media department to figure out why they only charged us the old sustainable Westchester rate. Are they just being kind? This would be great if they are, because that's what's happening online.
Well, they may have made a mistake, and they don't realize it's under yet.
I doubt they
made
a mistake.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you, though, about is there going to be a basis? I understand that the White Plains mayor, Tom Roach, he's suggesting that there'd be greater installation of solar panels. Is that a doable project? Is that going to compensate for the difference in the cost of electricity that we get now by the way it's being distributed? Will the solar panels
It has for the last 6 years. It has for the last 6 years. It has actually worked. I mean, you've got 25 cities and towns all working as a cooperative buy, and that is more than half of the towns and cities in Westchester County. That is a real threat. That is a real threat to the way power companies do business.
So what do they do to compensate for that challenge? Or can they do anything?
Well, right now, they are... Thanks to this pause, there have been a number of attempts to get you to switch into rates offered by ESCOs. In fact, I got one just on Saturday from an outfit called Clean Energy, about the fourth promotion I've received in the last 7 or 8 months. And they are now offering 16.6 cents per kilowatt hour for the first month, with subsequent months priced below, and that is variable.
Uh-huh.
So here you go.
Is this confusing? Is it confusing to
yes,
the consumer
I'd say so.
With all these? Why is there such a disparity between one and the other? That's what I don't understand.
Well, this is based on what they think the cost of generating electricity is going to be, either green or dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I 16 cents a kilowatt hour, like the charge I got for delivery of the kilowatt hours in July was $14. And let's see, I've got the bill right here, $14 and $0.15 per kilowatt hour, 15 cents
mm-hmm.
per kilowatt hour. So the latest promotion from the Clean Energy mailing reflects that. It's a cent more.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these economics are very confusing. Economics are very, very confusing. I think the information about this has been, it's absolutely been silent from the governor's office, from the state senators, from the assembly persons. Only one assembly person has spoke up about this, and that was Nair Sayegh of Yonkers. And I commend him mm-hmm. for it. The people of Yonkers are getting killed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, on these rates. Because, let's face it, many of them live in apartments. The apartment owners
yeah.
pass the cost of electricity on to them, and they have no control over it because it's a price.
Absolutely.
And the apartment dweller is getting moited here, as they say in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to go on probably until November the 1st. And as
probably
we all know, the heat is going to last until November 1st at this rate.
Exactly. Well,
this is not good. Not at all.
Well, this is a very pertinent issue, but then we've got a couple of other things that are also that you reported about. There were about 10,268 new COVID-19 cases that became known in July of this year.
Yeah.
So what's the rationale for not, what's the rationale for not divulging the numbers of hospitalizations that have taken place? What is the government trying to do? Are they trying to placate us by not giving us the numbers? Are they
trying to make us feel good? They are limiting the severity of it. I think 10,000 infections in a month dismissed as, well, they're not sick very much, is not a way to think about it. Because people who get sick can harbor the disease and the germs in their mouths and give it to other people, yet they blithely walk around without masks, give it to their family and family gatherings. Children give it to each other. And who knows? We don't know. That's my point of writing that article I did yesterday about.
Yeah.
I wrote a theory about number ganda, which means putting out numbers which don't mean anything but promote a cause.
Absolutely, I've been noticing there's more of that. It's like a political game of words, and it just doesn't deal with the issues. It's obfuscation, it seems, like deceptive. And I don't understand what they're accomplishing. Or is the government accomplishing?
They stay in power. People think
they're
doing their job. A good example of that is the New York Times this morning, which laud Schumer as making a deal. They are making a hero out of this guy. How long has he had to make this deal? 2 years.
Exactly.
It's basically
party
a cave.
Right.
I mean, they have eliminated the ability to really regulate how much emissions plants can do. I mean, how is that helping?
That's a good question, because I don't have the answer.
Right, and of course, they're not asking Schumer. What can I say?
No.
They passed it. Biden is going to sign it. And not only that, but there is a big article about Biden's great summer in the editorial section or opinion section of the Times today.
Yeah.
You know, this is the section that columnists have been pleading for Biden not to run because he's not just done such a lousy job. And now all of a sudden, he makes a ninth inning comeback?
Mm-hmm.
Who? I mean, the problem is it's too late.
It's too late.
It's too late and it's too little. And, of course, the tax reform, I mean, I'm telling you, nobody is really caring about taxes now. They're worried about the heat.
They're worried about the bills. Yeah,
they're worried about their electric bills. They're worried about inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And now supposedly this is going to help inflation. But I don't think it will.
I don't even know. I think that there's so much speculation and it's not based on logic anymore. I think it's just a political game. It's all we're seeing. It's in action.
It's about everybody staying in power.
Yeah.
Right. Is in
Which
power.
Which brings us really
and,
to the other point that you brought forward. Evidently, party affiliation may be changed if it's accomplished before the 23rd of August or before the 23rd of August primaries, but it's not going to take effect until the 30th of August. What are they trying to do here? And you have to file the change prior to August 11th. It's so confusing. It's mind-boggling.
Well, what they suddenly realized was that people could switch parties and vote in another party's primaries to affect what kind of candidate is put up.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you switched from Democrat to Republican, you could vote for, like, Mr. Giuliani, you know, who might not be as effective as Mr. Selden. I think that's his name, right?
Selden. Right.
Right.
Selden. Right.
Yeah. Well, there is an. So what happened was they went back to McAllister, the judge in Steuben County, and McAllister ruled, bingo, hey, you can't switch parties unless you do it before August 11th. So this prevents the last minute shift. But they've been doing that for a while now. They've been able to switch parties, but they didn't know.
Unbelievable.
Look, it's another example of how we have some of the dumber people up there in the state legislature and the governor's office who didn't realize this.
Well, Hochul, rather than Giuliani, it was Hochul who's running as a Democrat for re-election, and then you got Zeldin who's running as a Republican. So if these things are changing, is it conceivable that there'll be enough people that can move the equation one way or the other? Are people that familiar with this change? That's a good question.
Nobody's paying attention. Nobody's paying attention to these races.
No, they don't.
I mean, the only organization putting out info is the League of Women Voters, who in the last 6 months have done an absolute great job of trying to make things clear. Do the Democratic and Republican parties or the governor's office do that? No.
No. No, they don't.
They don't.
They're
just trying to get whistle past the graveyard of this year's gerrymandering scandal.
Yeah.
The graveyard of the idea that the elected representatives care and treat each other with respect and want the best representation that the people can have. And what they did this year, the Democratic Party that controls both houses and the Republican Party that challenged, were just acting in their own self-interest to do this.
Well, that's what they were doing.
Now we have this mess.
They've been doing this for a long time, both parties, but have they actually separated from the public interest? I mean, they still need the public for the vote, but it seems that they no longer really engage the public as much as they used to, or it seems that it was required. Now it seems they barely talk to the public, and we know very, very little. And the reporting stinks. It's not because we're not doing the job. We're just not getting the information. It's unbelievable.
Yes, they have suddenly discovered.
Yeah.
Thanks to Roger Ailes, the founder of Fox News, what you have now, you have a culture of news that uses news as a tool to increase a point of view, to promote a point of view. And now this is accepted news. Just as the New York Times is a cheerleader for the left, Fox News is a cheerleader for the right.
Exactly.
And CNN is a cheerleader for the left. MSNBC is sort of right down the middle. And the network newscasts are too short to be significant.
You have to have any gravitas. Absolutely.
Yeah. Nobody watches them.
Like MSNBC, because they're middle of the road, are they losing traction? And are people gravitating to
opinion? Well, they're losing
personalities.
They're losing
personalities. Yeah.
They lost Rachel Maddow. And I think Maddow had a great program when she first started, but then she concentrated on one story for 1 hour, beating it to death. And even though she was the most watched commentator on MSNBC, I felt she made a mistake in not putting the format more on what is happening on various fronts for 1 hour. In fact, I mean, that I thought is the greatest liability of the news networks. There's too much discussion of what the news means and not what the news actually is.
That's a very lucid point. Because I've found that to be the same way as you described it. It's all based on rating and money, and it's not about the news at all. It just doesn't cut it anymore.
So
we're being fooled into one direction or the other, and we've already sided with what side we want to hear. So we don't get a balance in the news. There's no challenge in the news. There used to be a time, well, I guess I'm an old man at this point, you know, where you used to hear more than one perspective. Now you
it's not
you
in your face.
One perspective.
News.
No, it's not in your face. Exactly.
By explaining what it means and giving it different points of view after you say the headlines or of your correspondence report, you immediately dilute or enhance a point of view.
Well, it's interesting.
That's what commentary does.
Exactly. We have like about 5 minutes left before Mr. Edelman comes on. But one of the questions I was going to ask him, it seems there was a conspiracy theorist by the name of Alex Jones, if you remember. Everybody knows that name. And he suggested that that the shooting that took place at Sandy Hook School was a hoax. And then he only recently he admitted that it was 100% real. And he's facing a multi-million dollar lawsuit. And now he admits he was wrong. And I think it's over $50 million that he's going to go bankrupt because of this.
Well,
suit.
He's declared bankruptcy, so that means he's never going to have to pay. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, there's this
trouble
with bankruptcy laws. The bankruptcy laws protect corporations, and they do not protect the individual. The individual may go bankrupt, can't pay a mortgage, but they foreclose on that individual. But, I mean, they don't do that to corporations. I mean, Federated Department Stores has been pulling this shell game for years. They run businesses into the ground, and then they declare bankruptcy. They've done this a number of times. And they are still in business.
Exactly.
These are the Macy's, the Bloomingdale's. I mean, it's a disgrace. The bankruptcy laws were created to prevent what happened in the 30s.
Well, this is what this is really.
But now they're a profit tool.
Exactly, but this Alex Jones issue is becoming evident that. We don't have the news, and people give you an opinion, and so many people buy into it. And why are we so gullible that we buy into it? How is it that people could say that there was no shooting at Sandy Hook? How could they say that? Unless I'm the one that's delusional.
Yes. People want to believe what they believe. Supports their political point of view. That's what we
so
have come
actually
to.
So it's the political
they
point of view that drives the equation.
They can't, see when there shouldn't be another side.
Exactly.
They don't
so
want to
So is there something about the human psyche? Is there something about the human psyche that causes us to gravitate towards one perspective because that's what we believe?
You know what I think it is?
Rationalize it.
It's
what?
Our obsession with sports, winners and losers.
Really?
Strategizing. I mean, sports is the number one watched thing in the country. And it has been now for 40 years. And it has grown. And the fact that there always has to be a reason why something is done and why something happened and and excuses are made. Well, that has worked its way into analyzing news events. There's a winning side and a losing side, and they're analyzed. And the losing side, even if their message is somewhat awful in its perspective, promoting discrimination and going against immigrants. Well, this is excused as a rational position. It shouldn't be. You know what is right from wrong. You and I know what's right from wrong.
It's true. So when did we become collectively, when did we become imbalanced? When did we gravitate from you know, the Walter Cronkites of the world who told us what was going on, and it wasn't always without blemishes. When did we depart from that scene?
I think it's
already now 50 years? Is it 50 years?
I think when they started doing 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes has a great deal to do with it. As good as having an hour of prime time in-depth look at stories, The in-depth interviews always seem to be striving to prove a point and not bring out what people feel like it. The great thing about the Edward R. Murrow broadcast on Joe McCarthy was he used McCarthy's own words to point out what McCarthy was really trying to do. He let McCarthy hang himself on television.
Fascinating, literally fascinating. Well, John, unfortunately,
but we don't do that anymore.
I've been captivated as usual every Monday. It's a great way to start the week, and I'm sure everybody else must think the same. So unfortunately, we have to say goodbye, and we have to move on to Michael Edelman. So just have a great week, and who knows, if we're lucky, we'll have a little bit of a cold wave, and we'll get a respite from the cost of air conditioning.
Yes, hopefully we'll walk down by the sea this afternoon and get a sea breeze. Never can tell.
Exactly.
So long for everybody.
All right, be well, John.
So long, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Right.
What
Bye-bye.
A pleasure.
Right.
Bye.
My pleasure.
You too. All right, let's bring in Michael Edelman, who's on the line. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy.
Well, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. I just love Mondays. I used to hate Mondays, but I love Mondays because I start the week, you know, with the right people. It's just wonderful. It's a learning experience for sure. I was just speaking to John Bailey from the White Plains Citizen and Reporter, and one of the things that came up was the conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. He said on Wednesday that he lied for years about the Sandy Hook school shooting. How is it that we believe this hoax when so many kids were killed? I mean, what more do we need to see?
37% of the people in the United States have college educations that teach them how to critically think. The rest don't. The rest don't. And if you can't critically think, you get mesmerized by what you see on the internet and what you hear on television. You automatically think that what you're being fed is true for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons with the conspiracies is that if it reinforces a belief you already have, then you tend to believe it. You don't tend to fact check it. And we are in a situation in this country where there are way too many people that are willing to take at face value, for example, what Tucker Carlson might say on his show at night, or what Laura Ingraham might say, or what Jeanine Pirro used to say before they pulled her show away from her, and they just don't think about whether or not it's true. They accept it as being true. So you have an alternate going on, and unfortunately, when you have the President of the United States, Donald Trump, reinforcing that alternate reality and bitching about the fact that his 2020 election was stolen when in fact it was not stolen, then you run into a situation where people choose to believe the person who's lying rather than the person who's telling the truth.
Well, I remember hearing, maybe it must have been about 50 years ago, I can't believe how old I am at this point, when what was his name? Walter Cronkite. We listened to him. Life was not always good. It wasn't always positive. It wasn't always negative. But he gave you a balanced equation of circumstances. When did we move away from that? And how did we move away from it? John suggested it all came about because of news magazines like 60 Minutes. Is that conceivable?
No, you're asking me when we moved away from fact-based news. And the answer to your question is when Rupert Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal, bought the New York Post and Fox News, and was in the business of feeding garbage to his listeners because he knew exactly what his target audience was. He knew that they would buy into nonsense, and that he could sell advertising time based on viewership. So he didn't care what these people peddled until very recently, of course, when both of those periodicals said under no circumstances should Donald Trump be allowed back in the White House. But it's too late. It's too late.
It's too late. Well, I was reading also yesterday the former Attorney General Bill Barr says the January 6th grand jury activity suggests that prosecutors take a hard look at the group at the top, including the President of the United States?
Mm-hmm.
When did that revelation come to his mind?
Well, first of all, they're calling witnesses that were in the room. They're calling the counsel to the president. And he's going to invoke a certain privilege, but here's the thing. The law doesn't allow you to invoke privilege if, in fact, you are part of a criminal conspiracy. If you are participating in a conspiracy, what you say is not privileged. And if Donald Trump was participating in a conspiracy, which clearly he was, by directing people to attack the Capitol, by his communications with Mark Meadows and others around him at the time, by his failure to do anything once he knew the Capitol was breached and his vice president's life was in danger, that's a conspiracy. And they will, I believe, pierce the veil of privilege that Pat Cipollone counsel may seek to invoke. They will probably subpoena other people that were in the White House. And if they don't, this is a federal grand jury. This is not the commission. And if a federal grand jury gives you a subpoena and you don't show up, guess what? You go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
One of two things is going to happen here. One of three things. One, they will indict Donald Trump for conspiracy to defraud the United States government.
Mm.
Number two, they will indict four or five or six people around Donald Trump for that conspiracy and name him as an unindicted co-conspirator as they did with Richard Nixon. And number three, his attorneys may be in a non-prosecution conference with the U.S. with the DOJ as we speak, offering be prosecuted if he declines to run for the presidency and if he admits that the 2020 election was not stolen in return for non-prosecution. There's no upside to prosecuting a past president because
even
if he's committed criminal acts, you're setting a precedent where one administration prosecutes the last administration. And that's more like a banana republic. However, in return for having all of these criminal cases go away, Donald Trump needs to do two things. He needs to swear, he needs to retire from politics, and he needs to admit that the election was fair. And then he can go on his merry way with his billions of dollars in his golf clubs, but he can't. He can no longer participate in the political system.
Well, what an outcome! But it seems
illogical. Well, those are the three choices. As I see it, as a former prosecutor, those are the three choices.
Yeah, amazing, absolutely amazing. It's amazing that we're still discussing this, but it's going to go on for quite a while. This is going to go into the history books. Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
After so many years.
What he did is more serious than what Richard Nixon did by a long shot.
Yes.
Richard Nixon only covered up a burglary of the Democratic headquarters. He didn't try to overthrow the government.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's like night and day. What Richard Nixon did was pablum compared to what Trump attempted to do.
Unbelievable, literally unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many other issues I wanted to talk to you about. This Dr. Gottlieb, Scott Gottlieb says that the U.S. needs to boost monkeypox testing substantially if the U.S. hopes to gain control over the virus. But we don't really have a vaccine against monkeypox, do we? We have one against smallpox. which I guess is
They have a monkeypox vaccine.
Oh, I didn't
realize
that.
They don't have it in sufficient quantities.
Uh huh.
They have their shortage, and they're talking about a proportional dose. In other words, as I understand it, if you were going to give, let's say, 5 milliliters as a normal dose, you would only give 1 or 2 of those millimeters, and you would spread out the vaccine further than normally. Now, it would cover you, but it wouldn't cover you as well as if you had the full dose until they get more dosages. Monkeypox is not fatal. It spread.
Well, that was very interesting.
Human touch.
I heard that. I spoke to a few doctors. They said you could also get it from a mosquito bite, which blew my mind.
Probably.
And then after I wrote an editorial about it, I was surprised to read that there were some deaths from monkeypox in Spain and in Brazil. So I'm wondering if maybe there isn't enough information out there about it. And what's really interesting is that you could also touch clothing and not even be sexually active, because even kids are getting it and they're not sexually active or sexually mature.
Correct.
So I guess we're still learning about it. And it's hard to know what to do exactly. Very interesting.
Well, I'm going to do nothing about it, and I'm just going to watch what happens, because the government is in a position to move in and stop the spread. But those people that are engaging in dangerous activity really need to understand that they need to stop doing it for a while.
Exactly. That's very true. But I guess a lot of people may be engaged in sexual activity and they don't realize that they're already infected.
That's what they have to understand. They have to understand that, you have these pride months and stuff like that where everybody's engaging in sex, same sex, which is fine normally, but not when there's monkeypox. So they have to calm it down for a while and let the monkeypox go away, or let the vaccines do their work, so it doesn't spread any further.
Yeah, very, very interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how society deals with it, for sure. I want to ask you about something else. It seems that Japan is planning to boost its defense spending. Did Nancy Pelosi, when she decided to visit Taiwan, did she make a mistake in the sense that she was exacerbating an issue against the mainland China? And could we have averted some other crisis with regard to the independence of Taiwan itself by some other means? So I'm wondering if this was the right move, because it looks like everything is being ratcheted up, and it's going to be a crisis, and the Chinese are not backing down.
We cannot let the Chinese bully us. Taiwan is an independent entity. Nancy Pelosi is an American citizen. She's the third in line to the president. If she wants to go visit, she can go visit.
She can.
And they can go stick it. So Xi is throwing a little hissy fit. It's just not a big deal. He is not going to confront us before he is reelected to his life term as the president of whatever they have, the communist, whatever it's called. And the fact of the matter is, he's just doing this display to let his own people know that he's not being embarrassed. But other than that, there's no reason any American citizen. Plenty of congressmen go there all the time. This is not the first congressman.
Absolutely.
It's the first time
that
high went. But a regular United States, they go there all the time.
No, absolutely. It's really very interesting that this is somehow exacerbated an issue. Are we going to get into an arms race with the Chinese, or is that already there?
I don't know that we're in an arms race with them. We're in a competitive situation with regard to whether or not democracy or totalitarianism is a better form of government. I think there's a. I think that is one reason that Nancy Pelosi went there. All over the world, we're confronting challenges to traditional notions of democracy. Look what happened over the weekend at CPAC, Conservative Political Action Committee. You know who they invited to speak?
No.
Viktor Orban.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's amazing
Orban,
from Hungary.
And they went wild when he suggested authoritarianism. And the reason, let me explain something to you. The reason these ultra-conservatives...
Because I never understood it.
Yeah. Well, the reason these ultra-conservatives...
Like
he's an authoritarian. The authoritarians take power, and then they make sure that the next election is fixed so that they stay in power, which is what Donald Trump tried to do unsuccessfully because we have guardrails in this company, in this country. We have the Secretary of State, Raffensperger, and Brian Kemp in Georgia. We had two guys in Arizona, one of whom, Rusty, whatever his, I forget his last name, lost his election because he wouldn't let Donald Trump force him to do something that he knew was illegal. Rusty Barrows, I think his last name is. You have people all over the nation in place. That is why the Republicans are trying to win secretaries of state elections, because those are the people that supervise elections in the states. And if Republicans understand that the more diverse the nation becomes, in other words, the more democratic the nation becomes, small d, the worse their chances of holding on to power. Once they understand that, they're going to try to do it any way they can, which is to manipulate the results, because they can't win normally.
Mm-hmm. And people are going to gravitate to that. Because
absolutely.
Is it because we're
absolutely.
That we're that ignorant that we don't even
well, no,
study?
It's because look at it from the Christian nationalist point of view. They believe that God and Christianity should be in control of the United States government, and that the United States government's laws and rules should be based on the Bible. So when you believe that, you will do anything you have to do. Okay, including upsetting the democratic process in order to retain the ability to make those kinds of rules and laws.
I never realized that it's being thought of as being blasphemous because it's anti-religious dogma comes from. I never realized that it was so vile. Why does it matter if someone's a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian?
Well,
or a Hindu
It doesn't matter to you, Hezzy, because you're a Muslim, a Jew, or you know what I'm saying? In other words, when you're in the minority, it doesn't matter. When you're in the majority and you believe you're right. Hey, listen, when I was in the Army, I used to have arguments late into the night with these kids that were 16 and 17 and, you know, on their way to Vietnam. I was in law school and I was in the reserves, but they mixed us for basic training, and we would argue about, you know, religion, and their answer was, the Bible doesn't lie. You can't argue with that. There is
no
argument with the Bible doesn't lie, okay?
Yeah.
Because they believe the Bible is the Word of God.
Yeah.
They don't accept the fact that the Bible was written by men and is a bunch of stories, and they think the Bible is a literal Word of God. And Christian nationalists believe, like Viktor Orban, and that's why they had him here, they believe that white supremacist Christians should be in control of this nation and Europe and every nation in Europe. And that's what they believe. And when you believe that, and when you believe that it's divinely inspired,
You will do anything you have to do. Okay? It doesn't make a difference what the name of the form of government is. You don't need democracy. Democracy is opposite of what you want because it allows too many people that aren't Christian nationalists to chime in.
Exactly.
That's why the minority is holding the majority hostage in this country.
And that's also why we're fighting all over the world on this religious basis where God is how we define God and scripture is how we define it in whatever book we read. And that's where all this bias and bigotry and hatred comes from.
Well, you know, religion has always spawned hatred because it's always been mine is better than yours. Look at the Protestants and the Catholics in England. They were cutting each other heads off based on what religion they were. I mean, it's ridiculous, actually. Yeah, so look at the Crusades. You think you missed the Crusades, but you didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. So what happened? Were we ignorant 50 years ago? And now we're just as ignorant or maybe possibly even more because the bias of our beliefs are coming out? Were we covering that up 50 years ago? How did we do that?
Yeah, we were. We did that because it was the far right wing was in the era of Joe McCarthy. After World War II, people understood the horror of the Holocaust. They did not want haters in the Republican Party, and Bill Buckley made a concerted effort to read out the Ku Klux Klan, to read out the John Birch Society, and to keep the Republican Party a mainstream party. That has slowly been changed. Thanks to Nixon and the Southern Strategy, thanks to the evangelicals in the late 70s and 80s electing Ronald Reagan, and thanks to Donald Trump winking and nodding at Charlottesville, at the Oath Takers, at the Proud Boys, getting in bed with Roger Stone and Steve Bannon, both of whom want to burn down institutions. Okay, so, I mean, that's what you've got. And Donald Trump he recognized what was going on. You know, he used to be quite liberal, Donald Trump.
He was always
pro-choice, always supported Democratic candidates, gave lots of money to Hillary Clinton. I mean, this business with the radical right, he always kept the book, by the way, of Hitler's speeches at his bedside.
Mm.
And
wow,
you didn't know that? Yes, you did.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. His wife, his deceased wife, testified to that in a divorce proceeding. That he always kept. For light reading, as it were, Hitler's speeches.
Wow.
And if you listen to the words that Donald Trump uses when he goes to these rallies, it's very Hitler-esque.
Yes, that I've noticed.
It's blood and soil.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
We're not going to have a country if we don't throw people out. That's what you've got.
I want to ask you one last thing. I didn't write it down, but evidently there was one state that has voted against any abortion taking place in that state.
Indiana.
Oh, it's Indiana. Why are they doing it? Is it for financial reasons? They don't want to be burdened by the financial capacity to an abortion? And what is it for?
No. It's nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that once the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the states make a determination. And in Indiana, all of these state legislators are evangelical.
I see.
They passed an abortion ban.
because that's what evangelicals have been preaching for 30 years.
Wow. And where are the women and where are the men on this issue? Are we being vocal enough?
Are who being vocal enough? The guys?
Well, are women being vocal enough? And are women being vocal enough? How come we're not making an impact in the political equation?
Well, people are demonstrating all over the country.
Yes, they are.
They are being vocal,
but somehow it's not resonating, and I don't understand why it's not. Is it because people are being evangelical and they are believing that the Supreme Court is right? But how could women don't have a right to choose? And shouldn't they have it?
Well, that's not what the Supreme Court said, though. The Supreme Court said that there was no constitutional right to privacy regarding abortion in the Constitution, and it's up to the states. But the effect of that decision, was to allow these red states to ban abortion.
Mm-hmm.
What they're going to do.
Okay. All right, so now I understand this. Unbelievable.
Yes, exactly unbelievable. But here's the thing, Hezzy. This has opened the floodgates, as you saw in Kansas, where 60% of the people voted to keep abortion legal. And that is as red a state as you can get. Trump won that by, I don't know, 15, 20 points.
Yeah.
That's going to resonate in the midterm elections with regard to these close Senate races in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Michigan. And you're going to find out, in my opinion, that the Democrats are going to hold the United States Senate, maybe even pick up a couple of votes.
Really? Wow. Boy, we're living in exciting times. Tumultuous, too. Absolutely.
Yep.
I never expected this upheaval in the United States. It always seemed that the United States was much more balanced and not placid, but just reasonable. And somehow, I guess it's because of the Trumps of the world, it's gone crazy.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's exactly what happens when you allow vulgar to be in the White House.
Yeah, exactly. And I never understood that either, the vulgarity of his language and his demeaning attitude, demonizing other people. It seemed to gravitate to the sensibilities of so many people who voted for him. I was like floored. I couldn't believe it. It was so uncivil. I'd never heard anything like that before in my life. It's almost like, it's like an uneducated individual that had come to the forefront and was able to demean everybody around him, and it was okay, amazing to me. Well, anyway, you've got mail, and then we've got to move on. So, what a pleasure! Thank you again for the education. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Absolutely, thank you, and all the best to you and the family.
You too.
Be well. Bye. None other than Michael Edelman, a national political analyst as well as pundit, international as well as national. It's just amazing his grasp and integrity, and just truly, truly amazing. Let me just quickly go see. Oh, it looks like we already have, let me see, our next caller. Bear with me a moment. Yes, it probably is Robert Keston. Good morning. Is this Mr. Keston?
Good morning. Yes, it is.
Oh, what a pleasure to hear your voice. I was absolutely astounded by the video that you created. I think it was in Florida. what was so fascinating about it was that I just never heard anything so clear in defining people who were gay or homosexual, however people want to define themselves. And what was interesting is that you were able to pierce through a lot of different subtle nuanced terms, which seemed to diminish the quality of the humanity of people who were gay. And yet what was fascinating is that you were able also to bring it all together in this video, because you showed that women, for example, they are the ones that seem to wrap the whole story together. So you could be a man, you could be a woman, but the point is women are defining who gays are, because they could be gay, they could be straight, they could be of this religion or that religion, they could be of color, they could be of not color, or however you want to define it. So where is the bias? Why is it that we don't see and we don't I guess validate people who are gay? What's the point? Where's the fear? I don't understand that, because I could never understand why people were fearing someone who might be gay. If your proclivity is to be straight, why would you consider that you would somehow gravitate to being gay? Or is the human condition so fluid that we can easily gravitate from one to the other?
Well, I think the answer to your question is, why do people hate Jews? Why do people hate blacks? Why do people hate?
I don't know why they're hate.
Exactly. And it's nonsensical, and it's built on fear and ignorance. And we have people who are aspiring to power that understand very well that dividing can lead to conquering. And the more people they can make you afraid of, the more people they can keep you ignorant of, the more people you will grow to hate. And that gives them considerable power. There are only a handful of world leaders at any given time that are inclined to unite us. The Nelson Mandelas are few and far between, but the DeSantises are aplenty, and those people can only gain power by dividing and conquering, and they divide by making people the other one, the outsider, the bad one, and that is how they arrive at the destination they hope to achieve, which is Lord and Master. It's
so what is it about the human condition that, yes, go ahead. It's unfortunate.
It's just unfortunate that it really breaks down into those two camps, those people who want to unite and those people who want to divide. And we know from history that uniting is much, much more difficult. Very few people have been able to do it. George Washington was one. Mandela is another. Martin Luther King certainly tried and was marginally successful, but successful in making us or forcing us to think about it. But the number of people, Angela Merkel in Germany was able to unite. But, you know, in all of history, the success of the uniters is a much more difficult task, to hold people together, to make people recognize that we are far more alike than we are different, and to keep that, and then to keep the society humming, because as soon as there's a bump in the road, people look for a scapegoat, and then the dividers jump in because they see their opportunity. Rather than an opportunity to fix a situation, they see an opportunity to plunder it.
Well, so why are we susceptible to our sensibilities being plundered? why do we go awry? Do we believe one thing or do we not believe? And so then the one that's most eloquent in their speech pattern, whether degrades or denigrates people, is going to win over someone who's going to say, this is not rational. How can you hate someone because they're of one religion or because they practice sexual conduct that you may disagree with? How do we define making love? Does it have to be, you know, with two different genders, or it happens in the animal kingdom as well as in among humanity? So what's unnatural about it? That's what I don't understand.
The only thing that's unnatural.
We pick on people.
We pick on people because we feel better when we knock someone down rather than building ourselves up.
Mm-hmm.
That is unfortunately the way humans have evolved over time. But once again, you see that in the animal kingdom as well. So we build ourselves up by knocking someone else down. We dehumanize in order to feel more human. We do all the kinds of things that we do in order to accomplish goals that are unfounded, based truths
mm-hmm.
that are not legitimate. And we listen to the people who say that we're the special ones at the expense of others who are therefore not special. And they are the problem, and we have to eradicate the problem. We have an economic situation today here in the United States and around the world that is allowing the dividers to jump up and down with excitement that they can blame someone.
Mm-hmm.
We have high gas prices, so we cast blame. They don't give us the facts of why these things are happening. They don't give us insight into how we can fix them. They just cast blame. They make someone the enemy, even when that someone has very little, if anything at all, to actually do with the problem. And that is how we create power vacuums. That is how we create false leadership. And that is because these people in authority very often do not want the public to be well-educated, well-informed. And you see that. I mean, Florida is a great example. Texas is another great example where schools are being limited as to how and what they can teach. Books are being pushed out of the classroom, even math books, because they go against the way these people see their power base being structured. So instead of adding more information, making it easier and clearer to understand, instead of opening us up to uniting, their source of power comes from dividing us even further and blaming everything on their enemies.
Well, aren't we all vulnerable to being demonized? So how can one tolerate being demonized by someone and the response would be to demonize them? What do we accomplish? Just to diminish them somehow? But they're not going to change, are they? Why does it matter if they are who they are? Then why don't we leave them alone? What do we want?
Because we don't leave people alone because they can be targets. If you can be a target, if you can be the enemy, if you can be the cause of all bad things going on, then I have raised you and you are loyal to me. It has nothing to do really with what makes them different. What it has to do with is, can I use that difference to knock them down and raise myself up?
Mm-hmm.
It does. You know, you could be green, you could be blue. If everybody was exactly the same, then we would find something about that person. They lived on the wrong side of the street. They walked differently. You know, whatever it is, we would find something that makes us better than them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we go after the weak link. We go after the low-hanging fruit. We go after those who are easily or more easily identified as the problem. In times of history, we have even found that people trying to aspire to leadership or to power have made people up that didn't even exist, really,
mm-hmm.
just to create an enemy, just to create an other, so that they could build themselves up and take the reins of power and control those who follow them. And we are in one of those situations where there's not enough information, not enough correct information, not enough of an effort to teach people or instruct people or inform people of how to decipher what is true and what is fiction. And so we believe everything because we're scared. We're scared we'll lose our housing. We're scared we'll lose jobs. We're scared we'll lose health care. We're scared we'll lose our position in society. So anything or anyone that threatens that is the enemy. A child from Haiti becomes the enemy. A child from South America becomes the enemy. Let's put them in cages. A trans child becomes the enemy. A gay man becomes the enemy. A drag queen becomes an enemy. In reality, these people are not threats. In reality, these people are more like us than we care to ever admit. Why? Because they're different. They come from a different place. They speak a different language. So they become the enemy. It's their fault that we have high gas prices. It's their fault that the food prices are going up. It's their fault that it was the warmest July ever recorded in history. And as long as I can blame someone else, I don't have to take responsibility. And that's what these dividers do. They say, it's not your responsibility that things are going wrong. They did it. But I'm the only one who can fix it. And so we become loyally blind to the people who pretend that they have the answers. And those answers that they have generally make things worse because they increase the divide between people, which means that we can't heal. And with that always goes on for a number of years before people have had enough and they get rid of the McCarthys. They get rid of the Hitlers. They get rid of the Stalins because those people create far more problems than they're protecting by making other people the scapegoat.
Is there a way to eclipse this hatred, this bias, this bigotry, this denigration, or is that the human condition? And is every society like this? I mean, I haven't been to... Well, I guess every society's got this, you know, the things that are being used to demean and diminish people. And we seem to start it off as young kids somehow. It's like a power trip. I don't know where we get that from.
We get it partly from our animal ties. You know, the head female in the hyenas has to beat up the others and get rid of the males because she is the queen. The head lion rules the pride. Our being human has given us tools to override those baseline animal instincts. Yet, when we're fearful, when we're unnerved, we resort back to that part of our brain that has been with us the longest. And that is the part that makes us want to feel superior. That is the part that allows in fear and anger and hate. How do we overcome that? We overcome that with real education, really hearing the stories of every human being that we come in contact with. No judgment. Those are things that you have to learn. Those are things that you have to learn over and over and over again in order to make them a part of who you are. And if your parents don't have those skills, if your teachers don't have those skills, it is likely that you will not have those skills unless you make a concerted effort to acquire them. So why do we see those behaviors in children? One, because the parts of their brain that work effectively when they're that young are the oldest parts of the brain that do behave that way. And unless they're guided into becoming good citizens, human advocates, they resort and behave in those fashions. And we don't have enough people diligently moving us to a more humane society, a more cultured society, a society where dignity matters. Instead, we have a lot of religious, they call themselves religious, I would doubt it, who say that God only likes the rich or God only likes the powerful, and they drive around in their Maseratis and their expensive cars, and they have airplanes and helicopters and massive cathedrals, and are on television asking for money. That's not what religious people should be about. How many Rolexes you have, that is not a sign of religion. That is not a sign of believing in God or believing in Christ if you're Christian, or believing in Muhammad if you're Islamic. That is the antithesis. But they use that religiosity, that faux religiosity, to gain wealth, to gain power, to make others the outsiders who we have to defend against. So it is really something that is ingrained in all our elements of society, and it is something that we need to contend with and to fight against in order to have a more egalitarian world, where dignity, the respect of each and every human being, becomes a priority rather than ostracizing some in order to make others feel better.
So how do we gravitate away from our ignorance and our bias? Is it through education? Is it through mom and dad or whoever your guardians are? Is it our teachers? Where do we go for this thirst that we all, I would think that a lot of people are searching for, because this other thing that we're living in is not working. It's hurtful. It's spiteful. It proves nothing, and it's not one step up above our reality. We're all debauched by it. It's amazing to me. I don't know. I guess I was very lucky in life. I find this absolutely frightening. I can't believe this. It keeps getting worse and worse as I get older and older.
As you get older and older,
we never stop.
We never stop, and the world never stops. And until we learn, until we listen to the stories of all people and stop pretending that history is just a series of biographies, we will continue to stay on this hamster wheel where the same thing comes around every time. It's not history repeating itself. It's that history continues to do the same things when we do the same things. Mm-hmm. It just never stops. And you have the answer. We've discussed the answer in previous calls, and it is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which respects human dignity and puts human dignity at the top of the list of the things that we need to do. And whether it's parents, whether it's teachers, whether it's government officials, whether it's the artists who entertain us or inform us, whether it's historians or social workers, everybody has to put that at the top of their list. People need to be treated as human beings, and all human beings were born free and equal. And if we could ever get there, the world would be a much different place. because we would stop judging people by what they look like or what we think they are and be respected because of who they are.
Is that such a difficult thing to surmount? Really, just to simply respect people? I've been through life where I didn't respect people because of, I don't know how I defined them one way or the other, but I realized they were just like everybody else. Not necessarily good, but not necessarily bad. Yeah, we're all the same, basically. We've got a little failure here and a little failure there, and you try to work on it in the hope that you recognize the truth. Why is that so difficult? Are we not being taught in school? Where are we supposed to learn this stuff?
We should be learning it at home. We should be learning it at our religious institutions. We should be learning it from people like you who have the ability to share information with a broad audience. We need to learn it everywhere. We need to make it as common a thing in our lives as breathing and brushing our teeth. Is it hard? Of course it's hard, because we're hardwired to some extent to put people down to build ourselves up. It is those who have transcended that, who put human dignity first, that make it possible for us to see what the world might look like. But when we go for our least common denominator, we go for beating others up in order to feel stronger, to feel smarter. And everything has to be about winning the gold. It is fine to honor excellence, and we can do that without demeaning those who are achieving a little bit less.
Right.
Only one person can win, but everybody can be victorious in a society that welcomes and cherishes everybody's contribution.
Well, if we do cherish it, where does that take away from us? That's what I don't understand. If I cherish you and other people, why would that take away from me? It would be, to me, a learning experience. It would be something I would have learned.
The reality is we never have to disrespect other people. It is a choice. It is a choice to respect. It is a choice to disrespect. And if you only see your future, your power acquisition through disrespecting, you will disrespect. If you see the possibility of uniting and bringing people together, your own humility as being a way to accomplish those goals, you will be a Nelson Mandela, an Angela Merkel, a George Washington. But if you don't, you will be a Donald Trump or a Ron DeSantis or a Stalin or an Erdogan in Turkey or whomever.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the ability to really love. They only have the ability to inspire hatred and distrust. And it's very sad. It's very sad.
It really is very sad. I could never understand how people felt embellished or emboldened by demeaning others. I could never grasp that. It never seemed logical, because you would take away things from people that you had no right to take. I never understood. Still don't get it. But it seems like it's part of life. I guess, you know, when I think about it, I don't know, get too emotional about this stuff. I don't know, it just seems so difficult to grasp. when I think about my parents' level, I don't know how they came through life, because they were young kids, went through war, and I don't know how they had the acumen and the capacity to even be so knowledgeable and be compassionate. And I don't understand where that comes from and why other people don't have it. I really don't get it. And
it's,
I see
it's
it
not
every
for,
day.
Yes, you do. And it's not for you to wonder why people have it or not. It's up to you to share it. And you're doing that right now. And that in and of itself is a sign that we can all make progress. Because here you are using your time in this platform to share the notion that by loving other people, by caring about other people, by respecting their dignity, we move us all further. Incrementally, mm-hmm. but further in a positive
right.
way. And by not saying that we hate the haters, but that we feel sorry for them, we feel, have pity for them, we understand
yeah,
that they're doing what they do because they know better. You know,
right.
if you go for the New Testament where Jesus is on the cross and he says, forgive them, they know not what they do.
Right.
And that's where we are with when we deal with a Donald Trump. That's where we are when we deal with these faux religious leaders that separate themselves from their flocks. That's where we are with governors and state legislators that pass legislation that is all about hate and not about love. That's where we are when the Supreme Court decides that the laws that they sacrifice have no effect on the people that they were engendered to protect. We have to feel pain for the pain that those people are in, that the hate, the distrust, the fear propels them to act in ways that hurt not just one other person, not just 10 other people, but everyone. And it is our job to counteract that.
So how do we go through life when you do end up loving someone, however you define that someone, and then people get married or people have relationships, how does that fall apart? Or do we forget so easily, or are we distracted by something else? What goes on in our psyche that makes us hate?
So much of it is how we develop as people and what we expect
uh-huh.
out of our own lives. And it is possible for people to grow apart and not hate each other. It is
right.
possible for people's vision of the future to be different, and so that's not the person you necessarily hang out with, but you can
mm-hmm.
do that without animosity and without hate. And
right.
I think that many people do that. But
yeah, I think so.
It all has to do with how you develop the ability to respect other people's dignity and follow that course, and that allows for change to happen within relationships on the most personal level, on the business level, on the governmental level, on a global level, that is not based on hate and fear and anger. When we do things out of hate and fear and anger, they never can turn out well. They just
mm-hmm.
can't turn out well. And we see what Putin is doing. We see Xi's movement against Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see all of these things daily. We see how people act towards people on the streets in our own communities. We know that we can do better, but each one of us has to do better if we are to expect the world to change. So I get up at around 4 in the morning and I go out and I do a 2-mile walk. No, a 2-hour walk, sorry. 2-hour walk. And over those 2 hours, I pass more and more homeless people every day.
Yes.
And so I have made a point that if that person is awake, I say good morning.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what condition they are in. And now many of them say good morning back.
That's right.
And it's only a small thing, but knowing that you're recognized, knowing that you're seen, knowing that other people see you as a human being makes a huge difference. And
I noticed
that
myself
is,
because I realized, I know I realized that recognizing people matters a great deal to them, and I feel good about recognizing them, and they recognize me back, and it's just wonderful. But there was a time when I didn't do that. I thought I was intruding. So there's always a new trick to learn. Not that it's a trick. I'm not trying to deceive anybody. Just it's nice to recognize people. Say hello. Why not? Smile. What's the problem?
Being human and treating other people as human is the greatest gift that we can offer.
It comes back, dude.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. Amazing. So why are so many people not aware of this? What is it that's missing in their learning experience in life? Not having something an ingredient in their life that tells them, hey, if you want to be respected, if you want to be acknowledged, shouldn't you do the same to others? Why is that such a difficult bridge to cross? That's what I don't get.
Because it's very difficult for people to give when they feel under pressure. And the most important gift anyone can give is giving of even the slightest bit of themselves. And that is often the hardest for people to do.
Mm-hmm.
So because people don't want to experience rejection, they often don't say hello. People who say they're shy are often people who are afraid of being rejected. It's not that they're so shy. It's that nobody wants to be rejected. And how big a fear rejection is determines just how shy someone is. Because someone who is shy is generally someone who is afraid.
Yeah.
And when we start to understand what these words really mean, when we understand what these actions really are, it's not necessarily that person is standoffish. That person has a lack of security. They are insecure. And so they act shy, or they act as if they're a snob. But they're waiting for someone to say hello first. And if you have the confidence in yourself to do that, and to not fear someone not responding. These things are not personal in the sense that it's an attack on us. If someone ignores me, then they ignore me. I'm not going to take it personal. They don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can go out and make another person happy because I've recognized them as a human being, I have respected their dignity, then I have done something that matters. If I could feed everybody, I would feed everybody. I don't have the financial ability to do that.
Yes.
I can ask government to do more. I can ask government to change its priorities. I can look at religious institutions and ask them to do more. But what I can do is treat people with dignity. What I can do is let them know that they are seen. What I can do is tell them that their story needs to be told.
Yeah. Definitely right on. Well, I guess I was, when I think back, I guess I was, I could have been standoffish at times because I was very insecure. But I guess, you know, when people recognize you, even though I didn't recognize them at that time, it was a lesson that I learned. So I guess we all have to chip in and do what we can when we can do it. A lot of people are in pain because they're not being acknowledged. You don't see a smile, and they're in fear. So I guess it somehow or another, it would be better if we were all taught these lessons at a much younger age. Maybe we would all
definitely
be in a better place. We wouldn't be fighting each other so much.
But we grow up surrounded by people with those same deficits. And very often we pick those things up. And then we have to find the strength and power within us to outgrow them. And that is hard. Yeah. And the longer we behave in certain ways, the harder it is to overcome them. My father is a great example. He pushes every day to just be a better person. And recognizes how much time he unfortunately wasted, but is making up for it and has made up for it and has done many good things and has treated people very, very well. And I, like you, am lucky to have had that experience from parents who understood that it was up to them to be better people if we are going to have a better world.
That's very, very true. I don't know what was the ingredient that gave him that strength. When I think back, I don't even know how my parents found the strength, considering what they went through. I can't even imagine. I don't think I would have the strength to do what they did.
Well, you're demonstrating that strength right now to anybody who is listening. And you're showing tremendous, tremendous courage.
Oh, I don't feel I've got the strength, but it's very kind of you to say. I just don't know how we get people to move beyond where they are. Maybe our comfort zone is not a comfortable place. Moved forward.
And that's what you have to do. You can't make somebody change. They have to really want to change. They will want to change when they see the success of change. And you're doing what you're doing right now. Showing emotion, showing concern, showing respect for other people, showing that that's important to you, with the people who listen, with the people who hear this now and those people who will hear it at some other time, that is a lesson that they will learn, and someone, somewhere will be moved, and that movement will move them forward. And that is a gift that you are giving people right now through this medium.
Well, that would be fantastic if that were the case. Let's hope. You never know. Well, I find that you were an instigator for all this good stuff. Your writings and your video. It's just so sensitive, so smart, so empathic. I'm just blown away by your capacity, because it shows a humanity that is devoid in so many people. It is shocking to me that in this day and age that we're so ignorant, and that the ignorance permeates our societies much more than I would have thought. It's just really amazing to me. And the bias and the bigotry and the war and the denigration that takes place, it seems almost insurmountable, but I think on an individual basis it can be done. So what keeps us from becoming a little bit bigger than just individual in our conduct? Does it really permeate out there?
I think that we know that it does. It's just that when so many other outside influences are working negatively against us, climate change, economics, health crises, pandemics, it is all too easy to resort to fear. And when people throw wood on the fire to increase the fear and the hatred and all of that, it becomes harder to overcome because that becomes the news story. And that's why I've said time and time again, the media has such an important role in determining, well, in helping us decipher what is truth and what is fiction. And when we blame, when we have a global crisis going on, to blame any single leader in any single government, in any single nation for the problems that are happening on a global scale, of course it doesn't make sense. And yet elections are won and lost based on that ignorance, that lack of being informed. And that's where we're heading right now. We can see it. And that's because media is not journalism anymore. It's not reporting facts as facts are.
Yeah.
It's part of the economic structure. So media and journalism have become, how do I get the most eyeballs? How do I sell the most soap suds? And that is a disservice to the society. Because an informed society, an informed civil society, needs information, untainted information, needs to know how to decipher what's on social media and discard the garbage and then determine how they're going to use the good stuff. And we don't really have people doing that. I'm certain there are good teachers out there that do that, but there are not enough of them. And right now we have one state after the next that are going to lower standards for teachers rather than raise standards and pay and benefits for teachers. They're going to lower them in order to fill the ranks with people who are just not prepared, not qualified, don't have the skills, don't have the information, and that will make our society worse. But once again, this is intentional because it is the dividers who are pushing that agenda, not the uniters. Uniters would never do that. Uniters know that we have to raise all boats. Dividers know that we have to try to raise the boats of our supporters while letting those boats of the others sink. And that's the society that we have come to live in, and that is the society that those of us who care will always fight against. Not because we hate the people on the other side. We feel sorry for them. But we also understand that they are out to destroy the world that we live in. They deny what is happening in order to gain power for themselves. And that is always extraordinarily dangerous. Uniters don't look for power. Power finds them because of their goodness, because of their generosity, because of their humility. Dividers try to create a void, try to create a disparate world so that they can step in and assume the adulation because they have made these other people feel a little bit better by making other people the enemy. We have to get to a point where people do not succumb so easily to the strong man, to the dictator, to the problem maker, and rather seek the problem solver. And that is hard. It, to some extent, goes against historic human nature, animal nature. But the dividers make us into wild beasts, whereas dividers help us get to a level where society could be, where the world would be a welcoming place, where we could live on this earth for a far longer time than what is probably destined based on what's going on now.
So the civility seems to be gone. When did that change? Were we different in the 1950s or in the 1900s?
We were not different.
Now in the we weren't?
We were not different. But we were still moving forward. And the force of moving forward to a better world, a more just world, didn't move as quickly as things move now. And we only make forward progress when we get to a point where things are comfortable. But in the 40s, in the 30s, in the 1900s, in the 1800s, if you were a minority, depending on what continent you were on, it wasn't so good. You know, if you were black in America in the 40s, it wasn't so good. If you were a woman in the 1940s in America, it wasn't so good. So we have to be aware that we look at good and bad from the fortunate or unfortunate positions that we're in ourselves. And once again, that means we're fostering a judgment that is based on not knowing history. And when we base the judgment on biography or of others specifically like ourselves, that's not history. That is not a representation of the world as it really is.
Right.
And we have to get beyond our understanding of the world and start to understand things as they really are. That's the only way we will make the change so that these terrible things don't keep circulating over and over and over again. And we're not there. We have a long way to go to get there because it's much easier to live with what we know, even when we know what we know isn't good enough to get us to the next place.
Mm-hmm. And what hinders us from knowing more?
Ourselves.
Is that a
Nothing
comfort
else.
Zone? Just ourselves. So why
it's
do some people grasp for more and others not? Is it just a comfort zone?
It's not a comfort zone. Many people go out of their comfort zones in order to do that.
Uh-huh.
I think you're an example of that. Probably your parents were. I know my parents.
Yes.
Many of the people that I've worked with, they go outside their comfort zone.
Absolutely.
Martin Luther King, outside the comfort zone. Way outside the comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way we make change. You don't build up a strong body or a strong mind by staying in the comfort zone. Exercise can cause pain as you build muscle. It's you know, it's not any different than that. You want to be able to walk further, then you have to walk further, and you may have pain. But after you do it X number of times, it becomes easier. So
I went through that exercising. Exactly.
So
I did that through exercise. So, you know, now I could walk further than I could before. But that's because of heart condition and stuff. But it was, but I pushed and pushed, and now I do a lot better than I did before.
That's
amazing.
It's all muscle. It's brain muscle. It's heart muscle. It's lung capacity. It all takes work. And the reason we don't change faster is because people are not willing to do that work because they're exhausted from just trying to survive.
Correct.
And that's a faulty system that we have that puts people in a position where they can't improve the quality of their lives, the quality of their behaviors, simply because they're trying to put food on the table and keep a roof over their head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
an economic crisis that we can't afford. But you hear it, you've just heard it last week as legislation was put through to have a mandatory tax of 15% on the richest corporations. And the complaints that came from the super wealthy about, you know, if you do that, we're not going to do this. If you do that, we're not going to do that. The fact is they're not doing any of those things anyway.
Correct.
But they're trying to scare people into taking their side. They're trying to put fear in the hearts of their employees and the people who need those companies in order to get by. And that is the worst element of society, when we use fear and hate and anger as a tactic to benefit ourselves at the expense of others. And that's just what we saw. I mean, we just saw it. It is still going on as the House prepares to vote. And it will continue. And we will hear it coming out of the House of Representatives. And we will hear it from pundits who believe in this great big economic divide that we have of few people having much and more people having little. We will hear it again and again and again. And it's not that those people are intentionally bad, but they are intentionally greedy. They are intentionally selfish. And they intentionally believe that they are entitled and others are not.
Yeah.
And that is not respect. That is not human dignity. And unless we fight against that, unless we inform people of why that is not good behavior, we will continue to fight this battle time and time again.
Boy, that doesn't sound like it's a good outlook, but it is the reality. So I guess that's the struggle, to keep at it. And to keep learning and to keep exercising, you know, physically and mentally. Because that's the story. Well, what a pleasure. Any last words from you?
Keep it up.
They've all been brilliant.
Thank you.
And you do the same. Well, let me go if you don't mind. I've got to do one last thing before the
you go
time
do
is
what
up
you have
for
to do.
Today.
I will go back to my work. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you.
So, thank you. Thank you very much. What a pleasure and what an honor. All the best.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
There we have it. There we have it, folks. Always a pleasure speaking to some brilliant people. And it's just wonderful to be able to meet people that are just so knowledgeable. And his language is so beautiful and so telling and so aware. So Robert Keston, just phenomenal. And I hope you'll consider, if you go to the Yonkers Tribune website, you'll be able to see the video that he produced. Let me go there myself. Just read it to you. Give you a sense of what's going on here. I think you'll find very, very encouraging. Yes, it is. It's at the top of the page when you go to the YonkersTribune.com website. It's at the top. It says exploring one of the largest LGBTQ plus archives and libraries in the United States, presented by Robert Keston. absolutely brilliant work and a learning experience. And it's just literally fantastic. It's the best thing I've seen ever that talks about LGBTQ plus and people and the archives and the libraries in the United States. It's truly, truly amazing what you can learn if you are inquisitive. And I hope you all are, that's for sure. Let me just quickly look and see what else is going on here for one moment. Don't know how much time we have here. This may just take a little bit of time. I wanted to catch up on what was going on. This is really important. The Russia-Ukraine update. Ukraine hits bridges in the Russian-held Kherson is the name of the town. Kyiv said it hit the main supply route between Kherson and the south bank of Dnipro overnight. Meanwhile, calls for access to Zaporizhia's nuclear plant grow after recent shelling. It is absolutely mind-boggling. The Ukrainian army said it successfully executed long-range strikes, hitting strategic bridges on the Dnieper River and Russian bases overnight. Writing on Facebook, the regional deputy Sergei Hlan said, quote, "What a night for the occupiers in the Kherson region. Strikes in the area of the Antonovsky Bridge." Natalia Gemunyuk, the Southern Army Command spokesperson, confirmed the attack, telling Ukrainian television, quote, "The firing system we have developed in recent days shows results." She added, "The impact has been considerable for both the Antonovsky and Kharkovsky bridges." Russian-backed forces also confirmed the strikes. The Anatovsky Bridge provides the main land supply link between Russian-occupied Kherson and the south bank of the Dnieper River. And on July 27, the Ukraine partly destroyed the bridge, forcing Russia to rethink its supply lines. By contrast, Kirill Stremusov, the deputy head of the Russian-backed Kherson Regional Administration, told Russian state-run RIA Novosti, quote, "There was one strike. A construction booth and a cement mixer caught fire. There is damage to the bridge floor, which means we will continue restoring it." Stremusov said, quote, "There is no critical damage. The structural elements of the transport crossing were not damaged. Russia has resorted to pontoon boats to facilitate crossings. Kherson is located only a few kilometers from the front line. It was the first major city to fall to Russia in the early days of the invasion of Ukraine." So using Western-supplied arms, Kyiv's forces hope to retake the city of almost 300,000 people. However, Moscow plans to stage referendums there with an eye towards annexing the Kherson-Zaporizhia regions. And there's much more that's been going on, but we don't have the time to talk to you about that today. So tomorrow is another day. It'll be Tuesday, and we'll see what goes on then. So thank you for being with us today, and hopefully you enjoyed the time we had together, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. Be well, and goodbye. Let me just think. Oh, God. Yonkers man has been arrested, charged with slashing a police officer in the neck and face. We'll learn more about this later on. Oh, my God, it's just impossible what goes on, what people do to other people. Disgusting. All right. All right, let me say goodbye, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye. Thank you for being with us.